way over, I was told about the wonderful American boats, the cargo liners, and I was advised to try to come home on a cargo liner.
Hmm.
And I had put in an application mm-hmm. for an American liner the day I arrived, mm-hmm. before the war was declared. And I received my reservation almost immediately.
Wonderful. Oh, dear.
It was just a miracle. Mm-hmm. Because at least I did have mm-hmm. a chance to get home. Mm-hmm. And we weren't given a berth, mm-hmm. a stateroom, or designated any spot we could have. But we had a ticket to get on the boat. And you took your chances. So, I was one of five people in a small stateroom reserved for the crew. But more fortunate than a lot of people who had to had to sleep in lounges.
Mm-hmm.
They set up bunks in the lounges. They had a woman's lounge and a men's lounge. So.
Well, you came back to the United States, and it was soon after that, another year or so, and we were at war, too. Mm-hmm. But, Dorothy, before we get into that, your father, we haven't really talked about him very much, but your father came over and originally worked in the stone quarries.
Mm-hmm.
When did he get his business on East Center Street? Did he buy it from someone?
He bought it from Thomas Platts, who had previously been in business with his brother, John. I think that John Platts had died, and then my father went into partnership with Thomas Platts and eventually bought Thomas Platt's mm-hmm. business, about in 1919, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Now, what was this called, the Monument Stone Engravers?
It was called the Platt's Monument Shop first. Oh, you want to know what my father was called? Mm-hmm. I suppose he was called an engraver.
Mm-hmm.
He did the lettering on the stones.
Mm-hmm. This was before...
And you can find a great many of them. I can point out many stones in Boxwood Cemetery and many in Mount Albion,
mm-hmm.
which he did the engraving.
Mm-hmm. Now, Thomas Platt kept in business with your father?
Yes, for a while, and then my father bought his share.
I see. Now, this was located on East Center Street
on
in the
East
diner.
Center Street at the present time, next to Lisa's Diner, mm-hmm. and the building that's occupied
by White?
One day a week by Vincent White.
Mm-hmm.
At the present time, Vincent White owns it. I sold it to him a few years ago.
I believe you have a very nice picture of your father and mother.
I do have a nice picture of my mother and father and my dog. Standing before
that.
Before the store.
Yes.
I hope you can use that picture.
We certainly will try.
I would like to say something more about the ship. It was a cargo liner, supposedly carrying 100 passengers, but we had 200 passengers, and we had to sit in Liverpool, sit on a tender, a small boat, for a probably 2 to 3 hours waiting to get on board. And after we were on board, the ship sailed and docked at Belfast, where we were not allowed to leave until daylight. The ship was completely blacked out. Passengers were not allowed to leave the ship, not even to get a newspaper. And not even to light a cigarette on deck. It was completely black. So in the morning we started out, and we had to travel on what was called a neutral lane, because at that time the United States was neutral. A large American flag was painted on each side of the hull, and the American flag was flying at the top of the mast with spotlights on deck turned to those flags, so there would be no mistaking our ship for a neutral ship. On board there were about 5 people who had been rescued from the Athena, which had been torpedoed on the north coast of Ireland the first Sunday night that war was
declared.
People, there was a man who walked the deck all night. There was a family of a father and mother and a little 10-year-old girl had been rescued separately. There was a woman by the name of Mrs. Roberts who had just come up from the dining room and was on deck when the torpedo hit. And she felt that her life was saved because she was up on deck. If she had been down in the dining room a few minutes longer, she would have had no chance to escape. So that was a very interesting thing that's sad. We did arrive at Boston and were given the privilege of leaving the boat at Boston or going down to New York. And I disembarked at Boston, and our passports were immediately taken away from us.
Why was that?
Would
that be so someone else
could? It was so we could not travel anymore abroad. Mm. Although we weren't at war, I still don't know. Because a passport was granted to you, supposedly good for 5 years. Mm-hmm. But ours were taken away immediately.
Now what year was this?
1939, mm-hmm. in the fall of 39. Mm-hmm.
Dorothy, will you tell us how you became reacquainted with the man who became your husband?
Well, as I have said before, I came back here in 1938 and did a little substituting, and then I was in Curry's store one day and he asked me if I'd like to come there to work. I've always liked retailing, so I accepted that job. And
now Curry's is a dress shop?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was located about halfway up the block from the Four Corners on the west side of the street. And it's only a few years later that it was moved up to the location where it was when it closed.
Mm-hmm. Which was near the Diana Theater.
Which was near the Diana Theater, mm-hmm. which Mr. Curry said was to be the theater district. I used to eat lunch over at the Maple Leaf, and Mr. Cox used to wander in and have lunch at that same time, so we started eating lunch together. He'd known me since I was probably 12 years old. And after a while, he took me out on a few dates, and in September 44, we were married.
Uh-huh. Now, his name was William
Henry.
William Henry Cox.
It seems that there were several Williams in the family, so they decided they didn't want any more Williams, so they called him Harry. And he went by the name of Harry Cox in Medina. Few people knew that his name was William H.
Now, at that time, did Mr. Cox have the jewelry store?
Mr. Cox had had a jewelry store since 1911, when he moved here from Rome, New York, after completing a course in engraving at the Rochester School of Engraving. Through that school, he heard of the store in Medina, which was for sale. He came up on the streetcar and contacted the owner, Mr. Frary, and bought the store. At that time, in fact, it was only a half of a store because Philip Bruss, the tailor, had the other side. In later years, Mr. Cox moved to a space which I think is now occupied by Knight's Real Estate. And then when a woman named Kit Sweeney, I think died, I'm not sure whether she died or was, she was still living. He bought the store from the estate of Jesse Ferguson, who taught for a great many years in New Jersey. I'm not sure what year he bought that building.
Mm-hmm. Now,
that he later sold it to Johnny. Lamina.
I see, the present jewelry store.
The present
store.
Owner,
you
yes.
helped out by working in the store. I remember seeing you
oh,
in there,
yes.
Dorothy.
Oh, yes, I enjoyed myself very much working there.
How was working?
I had had a bit of experience. Yeah. I broke away from teaching a couple of times. Yeah. I had 1 year's experience in the millinery department of Lord & Taylor's.
In New York City?
In New York City on Fifth Avenue.
Wow.
Where I had charge of the display for the department. I was allowed to go downstairs and pick out gloves and hankies and scarves and all the accessories that went with the hats and then come up and decorate the department.
Well, that's when people really wore hats.
Yes, absolutely.
Right, gloves and hats.
Mm-hmm. We had two hat departments. We had a regular and we had a French department.
Right. Well, how was working in a jewelry store different than teaching? Harder on the feet, right?
Yes, it was hard, much harder on the feet, but after a while, you know, you become a little bit fed up on just teaching, talking to children. Mm-hmm. It's rather nice to talk to adults.
Yes.
Then I had had quite a bit of training while we were at Lord & Taylor's. Mm-hmm. We would have conferences, we would have talks on merchandising, talks on color, talks on materials. And that experience was very good.
Mm-hmm.
It carried over.
Mm-hmm. What do you, can you remember any things that happened in the Medina jewelry store? For instance, when the American Legion Convention came to town, you were telling me about something.
We were very fortunate. We were never held up. Although my husband used to anticipate it,
mm-hmm.
and he would go across the street to eat his lunch at the Maple Leaf mm-hmm. and sit where he could keep an eye on the store
mm-hmm.
in case anything happened. But our only bad experience was when a Legion convention came here. We were staying over the weekend at our cottage at the lake, and our daughter rushed down early in the morning and said, "Your window's been broken." Someone had thrown a beer bottle through the plate glass window
mm-hmm.
and shattered it, spilled the beer on the chest of silver, on the background. But My husband doesn't believe in carrying too much insurance.
Oh dear.
So he gladly paid the bill for the new plate glass, and he figured he was way ahead.
Well, you were very fortunate that you weren't held up. Today,
oh, yes,
that seems
yes.
to be the thing to do.
1956, my husband retired. He sold the store to the Skirto brothers. And in 1957, we went to Wales and England. He had relatives in England, and I had relatives in Wales. We spent about 6 weeks over there at that time. We sailed from Montreal and returned by way of Montreal. By going that northern route, the distance is shortened.
Mm-hmm.
But it was an 8-day trip, which I enjoy. And we left here in the middle of of May and sighted icebergs, and for 24 hours we had to sail through soft crushed ice. And the boats have to slow down, because if they didn't, the steel plates on the side of the ship would be injured by the broken ice.
Mm-hmm. While you were in Wales, were you able to find any relatives or old homes that you had heard about?
Oh, well, this was just going back to Wales, because I just went over the route which I'd covered the first time. My two cousins met me at the boat and hustled us through customs and picked up a taxi, and we went to my cousin's home in Liverpool, a suburb of Liverpool, and we made our headquarters there. And from there we made these short trips.
Mm-hmm.
Made the trip down to southern part of England, Somerset, Shire, I think you call it, and spent some time with a cousin of Harry's who took us around that part of the country. And then we came back up to Wales, to Liverpool, and from Liverpool we made a short trip over to Ireland by air. And we went to another part of Wales, which is near Carnarvon Castle, and stayed with the Griff Perry family. And he's the one who is now a scriptwriter for BBC.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the home where the Prince of Wales visited.
Tell me about the Prince of Wales going to this home. I think you said it was the first visit that the Prince of Wales had had
any member of the royal.
Oh, any member of the royal family?
It was the first visit in 600 years that any member of the royal family had visited in Wales.
How did he happen to go into your grandmother's home?
I'm not sure, except it might be through this Griffith Perry, who writes for the BBC, because his brother at Bangor University was the man who had taught the Prince of Wales a few sentences in the Welsh language, and it might have been through that combination. But it was, this is shown much better in the newspaper report.
Mm-hmm.
Of course it rained, they were supposed to have a picnic outdoors, and it rained as usual. So they had a buffet lunch in my grandmother's dining room.
And this was in 1969 that this that the prince had gone there.
In 1970, my husband died after a fairly short illness, and he was buried in Rome, New York, next to his first wife, Elizabeth Edwards. The Edwards family have a very large plot in that cemetery.
Dorothy, you have been very active in community affairs. Would you tell us some of the things in which you have been involved?
I became involved with the first Girl Scout Council in Medina. Some of the members I remember particularly, Augusta Chater, who now lives in Saco, Maine, Mrs. John Shoemaker Sr., Mrs. Mildred Rosenkrantz, Jane Addis Hart, sister to Mrs. Hellenkamp, Christine Trippensey, the wife of the superintendent of schools, and Marcia Skinner. Those are the only names I can recall quickly. But we did found Girl Scouting in Medina and had our office upstairs in the building which was destroyed by fire at the corner of Main Street and East Center Street.
What would have been the approximate date of that, Dorothy?
The date of that fire?
No, the date of the council, the Girl Scout Council.
I would say possibly 1945, 6, 7, along in there somewhere. Mm-hmm. Okay. It was after I was married, I'm sure.
You are. Evidently, this is going to be.
This is tape two. Dorothy, would you tell us other Medina activities that you've been interested in?
Well, at one time, I was, believe it or not, I headed the fun drive for the Girl Scouts and spent hours up in the back bedroom counting pennies and dimes and nickels and covering areas that other people didn't cover. I have been a member of the American Association University of Women. In fact, I'm a charter member. I don't think there's another one left in Medina at the present time. I belong to the Wildwood Twig, the Presbyterian Church, and for a few years I did volunteer work at the hospital. In fact, I was working at that hospital when Susan Knights was born, which was in 1942. So off and on over the years, I have done volunteer work at the reception desk.
Dorothy, as we're sitting here talking at your lovely home in 115 Roseland Avenue, you have said that this house was one of the first, if not the very first, new house to be built.
It was the first new house that was built on this property.
On Roseland Avenue.
On Roseland Avenue.
And that was in 1911?
1911, that my father bought two lots, one facing Roseland Avenue, the other facing Ensign. Shall we say a few words about these streets? Roseland Avenue was named after the wife of Mr. Meade, who was the man who sold this property. Ensign Avenue was named after a member of his family. Worthy was named after a member of his family. And of course, Meade was named after himself. and Elwood was named. Each street is named after a member of the Meade family.
How do you spell Meade?
M-E-A-D. In later years, the Meade family moved out to California.
What was his business?
I don't know that he had a business. I don't know, but what he inherited, this big farm.
Uh-huh. Is he the one that had the grandiose name of Brooklyn Heights for this whole area?
I don't know whether that was his idea or whether it was the promoter's idea. Uh-huh. But it was known as a new development called Brooklyn Heights. No one remembers that. It never stuck. Mm-hmm. It was very quickly forgotten.
Except that there were brochures out on it.
We only find it in the ad.
Yes.
For the one-day sale. And it may be in the search mm-hmm. of the property. Mm-hmm. My searches are in the safe deposit box, and so I can't refer to them right now. Mm-hmm. The people who settled on this street were mostly of English origin, second generation. The first house on the north side was built by Mr. Fisher, who was a carpenter and builder. The next house was built by Dan Bigelow. The third by Ralph Roberts, who was an electrician. The fourth by John Miller, who was a builder and contractor, and sold it immediately to the Warren family. The house next to mine was built by Mr. Miller for his own occupancy with the idea of an apartment on the second floor for income mm-hmm. when he retired.
Now, is that the house that has the unusual basement?
That is the house that has the beautiful stone basement, which was taken from the old academy school. Mm-hmm. And I think laid by a handsome Italian, I believe by the name of Nenny, but I cannot prove that. Uh-huh. 115, of course, is this home. The next home beyond was built by Claire Watterson and his wife. Hmm. Mrs. Watterson is at Orchard Manor at the present time. The next house was built by a family by the name of White, and the one beyond that was built by this same John Miller, a very large house occupied by Brent Millers, had only one daughter, and she died during the flu epidemic. So it left the two of them, and they decided that house was too large. So that is when he built the house at 113 and sold the one, the large house. Now, from then on, I couldn't quite tell you who occupied the homes, who built them. Mm-hmm. But across the street, a house was built by William Taylor, who later had a Taylor furniture factory. Mm-hmm. And he had three daughters and a son who were raised there. The house east of that was built by Mr. and Mrs. James Bacon. That would be the father and mother of Armand Bacon and Barbara. The one beyond that was built by Arthur Watterson, who was a supervisor, I think he was called, at the S.A. Cook Building. Mm-hmm. on East Avenue. The one by the beyond that was built by a Bennett family on a piece of property that my father sold to them, a lot that he sold to them. The next one was built by a big policeman named William McGinn. Has since been sold, occupied by the Warren family. Beyond that was the one built by the Fillinghams, and one built by Mr. Belzerzak with the idea of using it himself, but later sold to the Pajak family. And those, the Pajak children grew up in that home. Mm-hmm. And about the last one up there was built by the Parker family. The daughter, Tiny Parker, had a beauty shop for several years. Mm-hmm. And the one at the very end of the street on the south side was built by Mr. Ward.
I think you remember remarkably well. You probably remember when the Timmerman house was moved.
I remember now that a Timmerman house, where their children grew up, was located about where the cannon is on the State Street Park. I have no idea why it was moved, but it was moved to the corner of State Street and Ensign Avenue, where it is now located.
That's
as years went by, these back streets began to be developed. Ensign first, and then Worthy, and then Elwood, mm-hmm. and today they're pretty much built up.
Is the building that was the Elizabeth Street School, is that now a private dwelling, or has that been demolished?
Yes, the old Elizabeth Street School is a private dwelling. It was a red brick building years ago, but it has been painted white. And I think it is a two-family apartment house.
Mm-hmm. Dorothy, can you remember when homes, well, when the sewer line was first put in and you no longer had to rely on back houses?
I don't. I do not remember when. I remember incidents. I remember it being difficult to go downtown where State Street was so torn up. And I do remember that we had an outhouse at this house mm-hmm. for a very short time. Mm-hmm. I also remember that my father had to pay to have the street paved with concrete. He had to pay his half. Hmm. And then, of course, sidewalks were put in. He had to pay for the sidewalks. Mm-hmm. Then there was the sewer, and then there was the water.
Can you remember before the sidewalks were put down as they are now?
I think I do. Uh-huh. I think that when I was in high school there was no sidewalk. Uh-huh. I'm not sure, but
do you remember catching the trolley out here on East Avenue?
Oh, do I remember catching the trolley? That's how I got to Brockport. Oh, the corner of State Street and
East Center. East Center.
Of course, over the years, things have changed, and now we are more cosmopolitan. We have people of Polish background. We have people of Italian background. In fact, we have a Polish refugee family living in the small house that was moved to Roseland Avenue from some area of the farm. Due to the fact that we have so many different backgrounds, this street is no more a neighborhood street. Mm. At one time, it was very much of a neighborhood. Mm-hmm. If there was trouble in one family, the other families came through mm-hmm. and helped. But today, someone can be very ill on the street and no one else on the street knows anything about them. We all keep to ourselves very much.
I think this is a way of life in almost every neighborhood.
Well, it could be, yes. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Each home has its own swimming pool,
etc. Yes, that's true.
Yes.
And we lock our doors. Oh, we don't leave our doors open for our neighbors to walk in.
Right. Even though we have good police protection in Medina,
that's
too.
True. But it's to each his own.
Yes.
And each one minds his own business and pays no attention to the others. Mm-hmm. It's a bit sad. I could list the names of people who originally bought lots on this street. All of them did not build, but most of them had their roots in a section called the English Settlement, which extends from the Harn Road to the Aaron Road and forms the boundary of the village of Medina. There was the Watersons, the Bacons.
Gray?
Two families of Watersons. Of course, there was the Robertses. And I would be willing to bet that there were about 10 people who had their roots in that area mm-hmm. of the Medina, bought their lots. But some of them decided not to build and later sold them to someone else who did. Boundary of the village of Medina, there's a section which was better known as the English Settlement because it had been settled originally by English people from the east coast of England. And they had built their homes approximately 120 years ago. And the first house was owned by Grandma Greenacre, Greenacre. Her first husband was a Watterson, and Grandma Greenacre was a midwife, and she attended the birth of a great many of the children who were born in that area. In fact, I was one of Grandma Greenacre's.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
When a midwife would attend the mother,
mm-hmm.
would a doctor also be present? You don't think so?
I don't think so.
Uh-huh. Okay. That's interesting. Okay.
The house next to the Chippendale, or Grandma Greenacre's home, was built by Robert Bates, who owned a small quarry on the Harn Road. At the foot of the hill was the home of Mr. and Mrs. James Gray. And Mrs. Gray was the daughter of Mrs. Selina Bacon, who lived on the Aaron Road, just around the corner. The house at the very corner of Aaron and Maple Avenue was occupied by a family by the name of Rump, R-O-M-P. Right now, I'm giving you the names of the homes on the south side, which was incorporated in the village. Now, on the north side, beginning at the corner of the Horn Road, we have the family by the name of Visa, a Polish family. Their house was more recently built and more modern. And I remember that they lost a little 8-year-old boy when I was about the same age. He died of diphtheria. Then we had a couple of homes owned by families named Rump. The next to that would be the Harmer house, William Harmer. His wife was the sister of George Garrett. Across from the Gray home was a home owned by Harmer family, Charles Harmer. Then there was a little street which went north